This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
And I then went on a 36-hour binge where I lost every penny I could get a hold of. I borrowed from coworkers I had barely known. I'd only been working with for a few months. Venmo tricks, PayPal tricks. I really thought I was gonna stop, right? Like, who wouldn't stop after declaring bankruptcy? I have $30,000 in debt from gambling. The paycheck started coming. That itch starts happening. It's only a matter of time. And I'm not saying that as like a threat or to be ominous, it's a fact.
Today's guest is Adam Lyons from Modern Meeting. He shares his story of gambling addiction and recovery, and his story is honestly one that I can relate to a lot. But before we dive into that, I have just one favor to ask from you. There's so many of you that watch this channel regularly, but you're not yet subscribed. If you could hit that subscribe button, it does a world of difference to the growth of this message. And my promise to you in return is that I'll continue to work hard each and every day to spread the message that gambling addiction is real.
Yeah, my name is Adam Lyons. I'm a compulsive gambler. I host the Modern Meeting podcast, which launched back in November 2024, and I've been away from a bet since February 8th, 2022.
So what made you want to start the Modern Meeting?
After 20 years of chaos, I found my way finally to a 12-step meeting. Probably 6 months into that, I started thinking, okay, why am I the youngest person by 30 years? Why is there barely any women? Why is there no young people? Yet I know that gambling is just expanding by the day. It's evolving. But why is it the same 10 or 15 people in these rooms? And so I got to thinking, why don't I bring the meeting to them? I started talking to some people that I trust in the program and the fellowship. And they all kind of told me like, slow down there, cowboy. Like, you're trying to do the whole, you know, in the 12 steps, they say 1, 2, 12. You surrender, and now you're getting all this information. You're so happy you're away from a bet, you want to just spread it around without doing everything else. And I said, okay, fair point. And then about a year later, I realized that after I started answering the hotline, and I just started, you know, really having some really meaningful conversations with a lot of people, I said, yeah, no, I need to do this. Summer of 2024, I started really considering it, and then a few months later we launched.
What happens when someone calls the hotline with a gambling problem?
So about a year in to GA, I was approached by someone asking if I wanted to volunteer for the hotline. I said, sure, what is the hotline? And they honestly, they couldn't really give me an answer, because in Massachusetts, I feel like a lot of different hotlines are rerouted to whatever hotline I'm answering. I honestly don't even know, but I get a lot of my calls late at night. It seems like it's after a big loss, or it's when they're driving home from the casino. But in the last 6 months, I'm getting a lot of calls from parents of young people. Basically, you know, what I do, which I don't think is what the person who gave me the job wants me to do. I think they want me to just list off some meetings and tell them one day at a time and good luck to you. I don't do that. I go case by case. You know, if the person calls me and they're down in the dumps, I try to peel back the onion. I try to ask them why they're feeling that way. You know, if they're not really wanting to open up, I tell them my story a little bit, right? And then, of course, as I tell my story, that's when they say, oh my God, that happened to me. That happened to me too. That happened. And then now the connection's built, and now we can go from there. But basically, what I try to accomplish is letting them know that they're not alone, letting them know that the exact moment they're sitting in right now, I was in that moment. And I'm 3.5 years away from a bed now. And then, yeah, of course, I tell them where, you know, their meetings are, but I also tell them about different resources. I tell them about podcasts. I tell them about websites. I tell them about, you know, there's different programs throughout, you know, depending on which state they're calling from, you know. Mm. If someone calls a hotline, I answer. Right now, at least, I'm not the referral guy. I'm not the get you the meeting guy. I'm the let's have a conversation. Let's make a connection. And let's let you know that, like, there is a way out of what you're feeling.
And you said a big part of like your ability to connect with them is sharing your own story. Would you be willing to share some of your story with me?
Absolutely, yeah. I grew up in a gambling family, not my immediate family, but there's a lot of gamblers in my mother's side of the family specifically. I grew up playing poker, grew up always being interested in gambling. Scratch tickets were a big thing in my family. I used to love Christmas where I would get to, if I couldn't scratch a ticket, I would want to sit at the kitchen table and watch my Uncle Rick scratch every ticket he got. Throughout high school, didn't have an issue because I'm old and we didn't have online back then. We didn't have cell phones. It was when I got to college, which was right around the poker boom, I began to escape. I grew up in a small town. I had 120 people in my graduating high school class. I played sports. I did the plays. Like, I had plenty of friends. And then I go off to college and it's 20,000 people in the undergraduate. And so I very quickly realized looking back that I kind of isolated and I found some people on my floor that like to play poker. And for the next 2 years, all I did at school was play poker. Mm. I watched rounders and I played poker. And the money wasn't an issue, but like I said, it was the time. This was a big party school in Massachusetts where I didn't do any of that. If I could play poker 7 days a week, I would. And eventually I left that school. And I started working for a casino. I took a year off and I worked at a casino in Connecticut. I entered into the territory of, okay, now it is affecting me financially because this was pre-recession, so I was taking out credit cards and doing cash advances. Mm-hmm. Doing that combined with, you know, a ton of keno, just gambling as much as I could. I ended up declaring bankruptcy when I was in my late 20s, I think 27 or 28. So now at this point, I'm ashamed, I'm embarrassed. I really thought I was gonna stop, right? Like, who wouldn't stop after declaring bankruptcy, you know, $30,000 in debt from gambling. And for a couple months I did. And then the paycheck started coming. And then that itch starts happening. And I'm like, well, okay, lesson learned. I'm not gonna do what I did before. No cash advances, not that I could get a credit card anyways. Mm. But I'm just gonna play poker. I'm just gonna, you know, I'm gonna work on a budget. So then I just got back into it. And obviously, knowing now, there's no such thing as working on a budget with someone like me. There's no such thing as small bet experimentation. Once I place one bet, it's a million bets. Once I realized that, I said, well, I can't be around here anymore. The jig is up. Like, my friends and family know I declared bankruptcy because of gambling. The last 10 years of my 20 years of gambling, I just bounced around the country. I lived in 6 different cities, had 12 addresses, 20 jobs. Mm. It was just me not realizing that it wasn't the location, it wasn't the new job, it wasn't the boss, it wasn't, oh, I just need a fresh start. It was that I just had a problem. Mm. And I wasn't ready to face it. And I was just driving and moving job after job after job. And you know, it wasn't until, you know, years of chaos, I mean, committing illegal acts to fund my gambling, lying, cheating, stealing, borrowing from everybody, borrowing from coworkers. You know, if there's one thing about my gambling, I definitely led that double life where I was always a compulsive gambler, but I always had a good job. Mm. I would be managing. The last job I had in the casino industry, I managed 170 people, yet I'm borrowing money from some of them. It wasn't until January 30th, 2022, I was living in Texas. Don't ask me how I got to Texas, but that was my last stop. I moved to Texas because there was no casino within 5 hours. So I know I have a problem, but I'm like, I'm going to just play poker. I'm going to work in a poker room in Texas. I'm not going to drive 5 hours to a casino, even though I had done that before. I'd done Boston to AC, but for 5 months I did not go to a casino. I was doing well. And then it was one night, the NFC Championship game in 2022. I lost a big bet. I was half drunk. And I said, you know what? Fuck it. I got in my car in Austin. I drove 5 hours in the middle of the night, half drunk, to Windstar in Oklahoma. And I then went on a 36-hour binge where I lost every penny I could get a hold of. I borrowed from coworkers I had barely known, I'd only been working with for a few months, Venmo tricks, PayPal tricks. And halfway through that 36 hours, I can remember sitting at a Keno slot saying, okay, this might be it. This really might be it. But if this is it, like, we're going down swinging. And I was up. I was up thousands at one point, but it wasn't enough. I end up losing it all, and I end up in a random parking lot in Oklahoma at like 5 a.m. I had booked a room once I had stayed there for a full day. I didn't want to drive home on no sleep. I booked a room with like a credit card that I had $140 on, whatever the hell it was, but I couldn't check in right away. And I'm sitting in this parking lot. People call it a spiritual awakening. At the time, I wasn't very religious. I grew up Catholic, but you know, I had a complicated relationship with God over the years. But I will tell you, in that moment, this feeling washes over me and I'm like, wait a minute, I think I'm good. I think I'm done. I can't do this anymore. Like, this is crazy. I cannot live my life like this. I just wasted 20 years of my life. 6 days later, I went to my first GA meeting in Austin, Texas. And I can remember driving to that meeting. And I remember driving there being like, you know, it's not the gambling. I'm depressed. Or, you know, I need to lose weight. Or I just need a girlfriend. Like, you know, anytime I've had a girlfriend in my life, like, that's when I stopped the gambling, which was true. So I'm like, you know, it's you know, we'll see what this meeting is. I'm going. So 6 days after I have this spiritual awakening, the disease is, this is the last chance, right? So it's fighting. It's trying to get me to not go into this room. And I can remember going up to that church basement thinking, like, I'm going to see, like, what you see at an Atlantic City bus terminal at 5 a.m., right? And I remember walking in, and I look to my right, and it's two, like, young women. Like, then I look, and it's, like, very put together. I was the schlubbiest looking person in the room, okay? And every single one of these people were compulsive gamblers. And every single one of them walked up to me like they knew me, looking me in the eyes, hey, welcome, congrats. And I'm like, what? Like, I'm like, what is happening? And then we open up that yellow book. And at that point, I hadn't even shared yet. I start weeping. I always go back to like the Truman Show, where I feel like there's been so many times in my life where I'm like, wait a minute, like, is this for real? Like, am I? And that's exactly how I felt. I was like, has someone been following me around and been inside my brain the last 20 years? And then they just wrote it on this book, everything about it. And I always say, you know, in meetings now, and I say it to my sponsees and I say it to everybody, 7 o'clock on February 8th, 2022, I went into that meeting. By 7:15, I had completed step one. I had completely surrendered. I had completely understood that I was powerless over this and that my life had become unmanageable. Insanity, imprisonment, or death. And I was insane. I was 100% insane for so many years.
Where do you think you would have ended up if you didn't find that meeting?
Oh, God. As you asked me that, the first thing I thought of was dead, which is a very strong possibility. I could have kept going, right? I could have found someone to loan me money. I could have got a second job. I could have done a PayPal trick. I could have kept it going. The stress and the anxiety and the torture, the self and all self-inflicted, I couldn't do it anymore. So to answer your question, I think if I don't get into that meeting, I'm in a really dark place right now, or I'm not here.
What does the future look like if nothing changes about their trajectory? That could include going to meetings. It could include, you know, the advertising continue to rise. It could include continued legalization. What's the future look like for a gambler?
I mean, it's not good, and I'll tell you why. It's because if it took me 20 years to get help with none of this, right? Like, the gambling landscape, just from 3 years ago till now, has completely changed. For the average person who may not have a ton of resources, may not have a ton of resources for bailouts or for to be able to keep it going, with the way that gambling is so easy now, in the next few years, like, there's going to be, these rooms are going to fill up, or these hotlines are going to fill up. It's a numbers thing, right? It's not like a maybe, it's a certainty. All of these people are going to lose. The people that don't have the addiction, the people that just gamble casually or maybe are problem gamblers, there it's going to be a long time for them. But the people who have the addiction, right, the 5 million people or however many people there are in this country right now that would answer yes to 7 out of those questions, the 20 questions, it's only a matter of time. And I'm not saying that as like a threat or to be ominous. It's a fact.
What particular challenges do men experience that lead them towards gambling as the solution? Why is it that the young male demographic is seeking out sports betting right now?
For me, I know. So the first 10 years of my gambling, it was just immaturity and chaos and action junkie and all this. The second 10 years was, okay, all of my friends are now here. Mm-hmm. They have the houses. They have the 401ks. They have the money in the bank. They're not living paycheck to paycheck. You know, if I do the math, here's my monthly nut. This is what I make. In order for me to be able to buy a house, put 3% down, blah, 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 that's going to take me. Let's just have one good craps roll, right? Or let's just have a good football season betting, right? And so for me, a lot of it was trying to catch up to all of my friends who did it the right way. And I wanted to just have that quick hit and then I would stop. Which, funny enough, Rob, there were so many times in those final 10 years where I had a five-figure hit. Not life-changing, but life-altering enough where I could have absolutely gotten myself out of a bunch of jams and been on the right track. Yeah. Never was I able to keep that money.
Enough to have done the things that you said were the reasons why you were gambling.
Exactly.
The 12-step group that you go to focuses on the concept of abstinence. It focuses on this idea that if you want to leave gambling in the past, it involves leaving it completely in the past. Then we see this conflicting idea of what's called responsible gambling. What are your feelings on responsible gambling?
Anyone who can responsibly gamble is not a compulsive gambler. Anyone who is a compulsive gambler, unfortunately, cannot gamble. It is no different than someone who struggles with alcohol, who then eventually gets help. They can't have one beer. They can't have one drink. They can't just drink on New Year's, just like we can't make one bet. There's a lot of studies coming out, and there's a lot of science behind this idea, and I can only speak for myself and the people that I have come in contact with in the last 3 years and 5 months. I can't tell you how many people, just in my group in Rhode Island, over 3 years and 5 months, how many faces I've seen come into that room and they don't come back. Mm-hmm. Or even the people that are there. There's some people that when I started, and by the time I got up to Rhode Island, it was March of 22. There are some people that I can remember raising their hand at the end of the meeting when they say, you know, anyone with a year or more, raise your hand. They'd raise their hand. They had 4 or 5 years. They're gone. They went back out, you know? So, yeah, I think if you get to the point where you ask for help for your gambling, you just can't.
I agree with that. And my sponsor always says the reason he wouldn't want to gamble responsibly is because it would be like kissing your sister. It's like he liked to gamble because of the chaos that it caused.
Right.
And if you did it responsibly, like with like $20 or like $100 or whatever it was for a night, and you leave when your budget's gone, it's like you've missed the entire point of what was addictive about it.
Oh my God. Yeah, like the value of the dollar for me. I mean, I can remember when I first started gambling, you know, I would take $200 to the casino, and that was a lot. Mm-hmm. And I would play 1-2 no limit, or I would play 3-card poker or let it ride. And, you know, if I lost the 200, it's like, damn, that was a tough night. Like, 10 years later, 200? Like, now, granted, if I was dead broke, I would drive for a $20 free play, you know? But if I had money, I need thousands, thousands. And then towards the end, in my final year, I would be at the Horseshoe Baltimore playing a slot machine. I would hit a hand pay, and I'd be stone-faced. I'd have my hand out there, give me the money. Thank you. Take 40 for yourself. Nothing. Dead inside. At that point, it wasn't about the money. There's a line in the literature that says, you know, oftentimes the compulsive gambler wants to lose subconsciously. You know, they want to punish themselves. And I think that's where I had gotten to at that point. Because in my mind, even if I hit the grand jackpot, it's not even putting a dent in what I've lost in my life. Right? Like people ask me all the time, what do you think you lost? I don't know, but it's in 20 years, like it's up there. It's well six figures. Like it might be close to a million. I don't know. And where the hell can you win a million in a casino? You can't. So I'm almost going in there every day knowing that, like, I may win, right? I may win that little battle, but I lost the war years ago.
Right now, we're at a conference for the National Council on Problem Gambling. It's my belief that the people that work at these councils are fantastic people doing awesome work and trying to help people who are going through a bad thing. With that being said, the sponsors for today's event include FanDuel, DraftKings, Caesars, MGM, PrizePicks, the list goes on, lotteries. This blatant conflict of interest that exists in the problem gambling space, where the groups that are trying to help people are limited in what they can say and do because of where their funding comes from. Is there any part of that that you would like to comment on, what you would like to see happen, what you want for the future, or is this a system that needs to exist as it does?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm so glad you asked that. And I know that when we spoke earlier this year, I asked you, I said, you know, where do you fall on that spectrum, you know, with the operators or with us, with the lived experience people? And I love what you said. And you said, well, you need a seat at the table, but eventually you want to get to the point where you can have your own table. Mm. And this is what I'll say is that, like you said, the people that work for these councils are fantastic people. The stuff that they hear and see on a daily basis and the fact that they are working tirelessly to help with, like you said, the limited resources and the limited funding. At the end of the day, though, we need to, pun intended, call a spade a spade. Mm. It's not enough. Mm. It's just not enough. And if you're telling me that the reason it's not enough is because the funding that they're getting has strings attached or that they need to be censored in what they do and say, there's nothing I've ever said on the Modern Meeting that I don't, like, it's the truth. You know what I mean? Like, I have no agenda. My agenda, your agenda, is to help people through our experience, help people through our stories. And so all of the call centers and all of the pamphlets, and it's not enough, right? I believe a compulsive gambler or someone who is suffering from any addiction, the number one way for them to get to that other side is a human connection and is a rewiring of the brain. And yes, can that rewiring of the brain happen through a peer specialist who's never set foot in a casino in their life? It could, but we're gonna have a higher success rate if they are talking to real people who have been in their shoes.
Sure.
Our intentions are good, right? It's not about money, it's not about follows, it's not about likes, it's about helping people. And it's about the fact that at what point, I mean, 3 years ago, ESPN or the NFL, like, gambling, no, taboo, no. Now there's a spread on the bottom of a screen 24/7 on these billion-dollar companies that 3 years ago said no. Why is that? One word, money.
Yeah.
So we're the ones in the wrong?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
You know, what are your hopes for the future? So we've talked about what'll happen if nothing changes. What would you like to see changed, and what do you think the end outcome would be if things did change?
So I've worked in the hospitality industry for a lot of years. The way that people look at alcohol nowadays compared to 10 years ago, 5 years ago, all of a sudden everybody's worried about their health, everybody's worried about dying, everybody's worried about the calorie intake. And so mocktails are through the roof. Alcohol consumption is way down. What's your gen? Gen Z? That's what you are?
Borderline, but yeah.
Yeah. So, like, you guys don't drink, or you don't drink a lot. I hope that this happens to gambling eventually. I hope that there's enough stories and that there's enough unfortunate heartache and enough destruction where people are going to realize that, like, I am literally doing this for a cheap little thrill and I'm making someone else a lot of money. I'm making the bookies all the money, the casinos all the money, the DraftKings all the money, and I'm getting nothing out of it but 3 hours of, like, maybe I'm going to hit my parlay. If it happened with alcohol, I do think there's a chance it happens with gambling. But unfortunately, before that, there's going to be a lot of destruction. There's going to be a lot of chaos. There's going to be a lot of families that are affected by this. If enough things are out there, like this documentary, like your channel, like my podcast, if we can get it out there enough and start not only raising the awareness, but, like, you know, battling this stupid stigma of mental health and of going to meetings, if all that perfect storm comes together, that's my hope, that possibly it can get better.
Thank you so much to Adam for sharing his story. And if you want to hear another story of someone in recovery from a gambling addiction, then check out this video next. Let's keep getting better together, one day at a time.